The Battle of Alesia, Part 2. Well, the Roman army had many distinct advantages at Alesia, but the most important one was centralized chain of command. Caesar gave orders to his commanders, and then they, you know, went down to the tribunes, and the tribunes went down to the centurions, and the centurions to the legionnaires. And all the Romans knew who was in charge. On the other hand, Vercingetorix was the most successful of the Gallic chiefs in creating at least some discipline, but he was in Alesia trapped, and the relief army arrived, as usual, split in the tribal groups. Now, the relief army chieftains selected four overall leaders: Comitius, king of the Adoebrates, two Aedui chiefs, both of them had actually fought with Caesar, and Vercassius Villanus, who was Vercingetorix's cousin. Now, the biggest issue going on in Alesia by the time the reinforcement troops arrived, the relief troops, was food. Vercingetorix eventually decided, because of the shortage of food, to drive the people who couldn't fight out of the town. And then that would reduce the number of mouths that you had to feed. Well, that would mean you're going to run all the women out, you're going to run the children out, and you're going to run the old people out. The assumption was the Romans would let them safely pass through to the Gauls on the other side. Well, Vercingetorix was wrong. The Romans wouldn't let anyone in. You know, they didn't kill them, but they did nothing. And the Gauls wouldn't take them back. So these poor people were left to starve to death in this netherworld between the two camps, which had to be a little disconcerting, particularly if some of those warriors had friends and relatives. When the Gallic relief army finally arrived, they camped on the high ground about a mile away from Caesar's outer walls to the southwest. The next day, after the arrival, it was showtime. The relief army, with its cavalry in front, massed for a magnificent demonstration. Vercingetorix, who could see it from his position, also formed his men up outside of Alesia, preparing to attack the same time the other army did, hoping to force Caesar to thin his forces. Well, the Romans were ready on both lines, with cohorts ready to move to reinforce any part of the battle lines. Caesar was open to the battle. He actually sent out his cavalry to engage the relief army's cavalry. This battle went on into the afternoon, but of course Caesar wasn't sending everybody out. He would hold those German cavalry forces, his best cavalry forces, back. So he had sent out auxiliaries and other troops, and they were doing a pretty decent job against the Gauls. And then just as the cavalry battle seemed to finally be turning in the favor of the Gauls, Caesar then loosed his elite German cavalry, and they then whacked the Gauls, winning the day. Well, the Gauls didn't send any infantry in to support the cavalry in the combat. And so after the German elite drove off the Gallic relief forces army, or at least their cavalry, both sides then simply returned to their camps to rest. Sunrise the next day, the same Gauls were seen making ladders and gathering rope, as well as gathering bundles of sticks. And you use the bundles of sticks, a lot of times you think, okay, we've got a ditch we have to fill up, let's bring the shovels and shovel in the dirt. Well, you can imagine how long that would take. So it was very common for people to get very large bundles of sticks, and then you could throw those in and keep throwing them and pile them up in a hurry, so you could actually fill that in a little easier. The issue you have with filling a ditch with sticks is you hope the other side doesn't set those things on fire. So everything has its advantage or disadvantage. At midnight, amid a massive cheer, so that you could hear it, and just about all the way around the Roman defenses, the Gauls attacked the outer Roman defenses. Various groups used trumpets to call their men forward, each tribe then hitting a different part of the Roman defensive line. However, you know, the Romans were not asleep. They were ready. It took a lot of time to fill the ditches, which, of course, was the whole idea for the ditches. So that gave the Romans plenty of time to react, form their men. Marcus Antonius and Trebonius were in charge of the segment of the defenses under attack. There were two charges. There was indeed fierce fighting, but the Roman commander simply very relaxed and coolly moved up reserves and stopped both attacks. Now the four chieftains decided they needed better intelligence before attacking again. So they sent out scouts to look over the Roman defenses. They then talked to the locals who knew the terrain really well. And the Gauls thought they had found a weak spot. There was a Roman camp on the slopes of a hill, and the Romans did not include the hill in the defensive line. They didn't do that because it was just too massive of a project. They thought enough troops could be kept there that would keep that from becoming too big of a problem. But there were two legions located in the camp, so that's 20% of Caesar's force that happens to be in this particular area. Well, the Gauls decided that this was the weakest spot, that their best bet would be to send about 25% of their army. Now, if you use that massive figure that Caesar gave, that would be 60,000, okay? But if you want to use a lesser number, remember, it's a quarter of their force they're going to put against this one group, which to some extent is 20% of Caesar's force. They were going to attack that location and would be led by Vercingetorix's cousin. So this force left the Gallic camp for their attack position during the night. And once in the location, they deployed on what's called the reverse slope, which is the backside of the hill. That way the Romans couldn't see them. The plan was to wait for diversionary attacks to take place in other parts of the Roman defenses, and then around noon, run over the hill and hit the Romans with this big surprise. So to some extent, the next day actually is going to end up deciding not only the fate of Alesia and Caesar and Vercingetorix, but of course what's going to happen to Gaul along the whole route. So, you know, this is if you finally reach that point of they do a lot of jousting for positions, and of course the Romans are gone. You know, the Romans had lots of wood on the inside of that. I think some people think that, well, you know, they build their camp, and then, well, if there's damage, what do? The Romans always put extra piles of different things around so they could reinforce the different areas. And of course, this idea of having so many troops in reserve, because you really couldn't put everybody on that one particular wall or section anyway, was really brilliant. So Caesar is able to maneuver these people around, but you did have that. It was really neat that the Gauls were able to figure out this one little weak spot. And even better thing is the fact that the Gauls were able to hold their discipline, because these people were probably desperate to get in to save Vercingetorix, and so they might have wanted to attack sooner. But they were able to hold their position until the proper moment and then surprise the Romans. So everything is coming to a head here. Now, the sources for this are, of course, the conquest of Gaul by Caesar, without which we would be hard-pressed to, to be doing this. Caesar, the Life of a Colossus by Goldsworthy, and Julius Caesar, the Life and Times, the People's Dictator by Camphora. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and of course, thank you very much.